Welcome to Conversations Live. For more than a decade, we've brought you the best in books, entertainment, celebrity interviews, and current events. When the movers and shakers of the world have something to say to you, they say it to us first. Here's your host, Cyrus Webb.
Welcome back, everyone, to Conversations Live. I'm your host, Cyrus Webb. Glad you all could join us once again. For our radio audience tuning in at WYAD 94.1 FM and WYADonline.com, we're glad that you all can be with us. Also showing us online worldwide via our podcast. We're glad you all could be with us as well. I was just saying to our next guest, it's hard to believe it was 4 years ago, the last time we had the famed attorney and bestselling author Marcia Clark on with us. At the time we were discussing her novel, Final Judgment. Her newest bestseller is out now as we're wrapping up this year, and it's another page-turner. It's called Trial by Ambush, Murder and Justice, and the Truth About the Case of Barbara Graham. We're going to talk to Marcia not only about what it's been like for her to find success with fiction and nonfiction, but also what drew her to this particular case and story, and what she hopes you as readers able to take away from it. If you guys are not staying connected with Marcia, well, we'll let you know how to get your own copy of the book and be able to stay connected with her as well. Marcia, thank you again for spending some time with us. Really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me, Cyrus.
Well, look, I've had you on twice before talking about your novels. I'm excited now to be able to talk about a nonfiction work for you. So let's begin there, Marcia. What has it been like for you to see the audience you've been able to have, not only for writing fiction, but also the newest book, like Trial by Ambush?
It's been wonderful. I mean, it's just been a great experience, and I guess it's the joy of having other people share your passion. This case, somehow, it was weird because I when I first noticed the case, I thought, I can't write about this because it was very famous in its time. Back in 1953, it was their trial of the century. They actually wound up making a film called I Want to Live, starring Susan Hayward, and she won Best Actress Oscar for it. So, I mean, I thought everybody would have written everything about it. There was nothing left to say. Come to find out, no, people really hadn't. One very slim book was written that was of dubious credibility and accuracy back in the day. And then a more recent book that was very good was written, but it was primarily about the death penalty, not the trial, called Proof of Guilt, which I highly recommend. So I wanted to see what happened in this case. How did this woman, whose history did not lead you to believe she would ever be involved in a violent crime, let alone a hideous, heinous murder like this one of a very an elderly, very vulnerable victim, the woman Mabel Monahan? I mean, it's like it was such a terrible crime, and not something that Barbara Graham's history suggests she would ever do. So that drew me in and got me completely hooked and obsessed with the case. And so it's really nice to see that I'm not alone and other people right. are getting hooked as well.
Yeah, and you talk about in the epilogue of the book, Marcia, the amount of time that you spent with this. Was it easy for you to let Barbara Graham go afterwards? I wondered that when I finished the book, because you do go into such detail about the journey of not only, of course, what led her to this place in history, but also how she must have felt considering other events that have happened in her life. Was it easy for you to detach yourself from her afterwards?
No, I kept thinking about her and kept thinking about how differently it all would have turned out had she had a fair trial, you know, and how different would it have been? I kept pondering that because I uncovered so much information, so much evidence that the jury never saw. And had they seen it, you know, what would they have made of it? Would they have acquitted her? Would they have hung? Would they have spared her the death penalty? I think the latter for sure. But, you know, how would the jury have felt? I think about that a lot. How would they have felt if they had found out that they were deprived of this key information? You know, what would they have done? What would anyone have done? What would have happened? You know, all that.
Right.
There, a lot of things kept coming to me.
And what I thought, too, was interesting, and we can, I think this goes into probably why this is a story that I think people will resonate with, Marcia, is that even though we're talking about something in the 1950s, you cannot read this book, and I'm being totally honest as a reader, and say, this does not remind you of the world, unfortunately, we still find ourselves in some respects. Did you feel that, too, as you were doing the research?
I really did. I was so surprised to see, you know, because we live in this internet age where there's so many sources and outlets and we get bombarded on a daily basis. Our inboxes are packed. And it feels like, oh, it could never have been like this before. And every time there's a high-profile case, everybody's weighing in on it. You have cable news stations, and you have podcasts, and you have, you know what I mean?
Right.
But they did. They did. So they didn't have the internet, or we like to call it the interweb, but they did have,
yeah.
like, multiple newspapers, many, many, many newspapers, and they were publishing two and three times a day. So they had their own version of it, and people were awash in the newspapers, but they had a stranglehold on public access. So that was really the only way. That and radio, you know, television to a much more limited extent. The newspapers were really where you got the most in terms of the real skinny. And they gave it to you day and night, literally. But they were also very biased because there was so much competition for eyes and for readership because there were so many newspapers. They were topping each other for the most sensational story they could possibly write. And in the process, wound up really distorting the truth, and in Barbara's case, enormously.
Yeah. Donna's name, is it pronounced Pro or Prowl, Marcia?
I think it's Prowl. That's how
okay.
I hear it in my head.
Okay. Well, no, I just only wanted to ask because I wanted to reference her because I thought something that you write in the book is so fascinating looking at Donna and what we do know about her and Barbara's case. Talk to us about that for you, and you can talk as broadly as you want to if you don't want to spoil anything. But what was that like for you to look at the differences in the way that they were handled?
Well, that was amazing. So Donna Prowl had been imprisoned with – she got 1 year with a lengthy probationary sentence for the a drunk driving incident that was so extreme. She was literally blind drunk as she careened down the streets, and these are major thoroughfares very near the Burbank studios. And she drove up on the sidewalk, hit a fire hydrant, hit a parked car, and then wound up plowing head-on into a car that contained a family of five, killing one, brutally killing one, and maiming three others. It was just a hideous crime. That 1 year, or as we call it, the county lid, that's nothing. And in today's world, she probably would have been tagged, could have been tagged for murder because she was so drunk and so out of it that even 45 minutes later, her eyes were not dilating properly. The officer just said to him, she's just blotto. She gets 1 year in the county jail. Barbara, in the meantime, who, as I discuss in the book, and you'll see why, never killed anyone, and she gets the death penalty.
It really is one of those fascinating – that's why I say this book is – I mean, if you took the year out of it, you would think you were reading about something from our day. And especially except for – with the exception of what you mentioned, Marcia, is that they did not have, of course, what we have today. But what they did have – and I love the fact that you're able to bring this up, and I'm sure your background made this something that you wanted to make a part of the story. That is, you did have people that tried – when it came to Barbara Graham. What was that like for you to look at those who came to her defense, literally, and was trying to help her?
Yeah, that was amazing to see. As I mentioned before, the newspapers all – well, I didn't say it, actually. Let me make it clear. The newspapers all vilified Barbara. They tagged her as Bloody Babs. They called her a villainess. They called her – they demonized her at every bend and turn, at every opportunity. They never stopped harping on her hair, her makeup, her clothing, every breath she took, every move. They went after her to try and show that she was this evil, cold-hearted, murderous temptress. And she was beautiful, and that made matters worse, if anything, because it was even more had even more salacious value. And they never stopped pounding on her. And all the newspapers did the same thing. There was no exception and no dissenting voices. Even though their star witness was the accomplice who probably really did commit, at least partly commit the murder, and they were so credulous in accepting everything he said, as though he was and he tried to paint himself as the rescuer of poor old Mabel Monahan, when in fact it's very apparent when you just even read his testimony that the story he was telling was nonsense. But no one questioned it until the end of the trial, when one reporter who had been working up in the San Francisco Examiner and had not really been in the courtroom, he was filing stories based on the information he was being given by people who did come to the court. he came finally down at the end of the trial and started watching and got this feeling of watching them in the courtroom and starting to think, you know what, something, I smell a rat. This isn't right. This is not. I don't like this. And he started to go digging, and he became, Ed Montgomery, became her champion. After the conviction, he went all to all great lengths to see that her conviction would be reversed, to help her find a good lawyer to help her, you know, with the investigation. He even went to talk to the two co-defendants who were the killers and tried to get them to exonerate her and at least give a statement. Now, how much that would have helped, I don't know, but you never know. He tried whatever he could. And ultimately, he's the one who sold the Hollywood producer, Walter Wanger, on the idea of turning the story into a movie, I Want to Live. And he collaborated on that movie. And Walter Wanger, who was a death penalty abolitionist, was very happy to have this story and did an award-winning film based on it. So this reporter, Ed Montgomery, really was somebody who started turning the tide single-handedly. Another reporter subsequently joined him, another reporter who, like him, during the trial, had been vilifying Barbara and talking about how guilty she was, and she was obviously a murderess, and she deserved the death penalty. And both of them, this woman who made it, it was a column she had in the Chronicle in San Francisco. She would interview death row inmates, and she wound up interviewing Barbara several times, as well as the star witness, John True. I call him the ironically named John True because very little truth came out of his mouth. But and she came away thinking, I don't think Barbara did it either. So it was, there were people, finally, but when it was too late, who started sounding the alarm.
Yeah, and I think that is, it's a story that, even though I have to be honest with you, Marcia, I'd never heard of Barbara Graham before this book. When the book was first pitched to me, that was my first time honestly hearing about her. I knew nothing about her. But I think it's hard to not think after reading this book of, I think so many times we hear these stories, and I think especially in today's world, and you know this more so than myself even, that we almost become numb to it, right? You hear these stories, they become numbers, you don't think about the people. But this book really makes you think about the person. And what I found really fascinating that you added in this book that really struck me was that even Barbara being in the situation that she was in, when she was writing to her attorney, was even thinking about other people and how mm-hmm. their lives must be for them to. And I thought about today in the world and the celebrity culture that we live in, right, how we are so quick to judge, right? We're so quick to want to vilify instead of remembering that these are people and that we don't mm-hmm. know, like in Barbara's case. Talk to us about that for you. I mean, having been in situations where you know where these individuals, what they're dealing with, what was it like for you to think about how she was not only being misunderstood, but in many ways miscategorized and convicted in so many ways, you know, not just, of course, for the crime, but also just for her existence.
Yeah, it was interesting. She herself had a very, very deprived life. She was the child of neglect and abuse. She was abandoned from birth. Her mother basically threw her out at every bend and turn. And never knew who her father was. Her mother went on to have two other children, unknown parentage, unknown father, she kept them at home. Barbara was the one she kept throwing out. Hard to not take it personally like that. So it was a very rough life. She wound up in a reform school that was nothing short of a torture chamber, and the mother had been in that reform school herself, but she kept sending Barbara back. Every time she escaped from there, she'd send her back knowing what she was sending her to, which was remarkable to me. And she wound up maybe getting through eighth grade, if that. She wound up with no skills. And so she was somebody who kind of lived on the fringes and survived the way people on the fringes without skills do. Shoplifting, check kiting, you know, these kind of misdemeanor crimes that are crimes of survival. And then she got married a bunch of times. That was another way of a woman could survive, particularly someone who was beautiful. So she knew, but yet she was someone who was inwardly very sensitive. She read Omar Khayyam. She read the Rubaiyat. She loved classical music. She loved jazz. She was somebody, she loved reading Oscar Wilde. She was innately intelligent, very intelligent. and did care for others. And you read her letters to her lawyers where she asks about them and how was your New Year's. And she's writing from death row. I mean, it's not like she's living in, you know, she's at some lovely seaside escape. She's living, as a matter of fact, quite a bit of her time. She was on death row. She was there was only one death row, which was San Quentin, and that was a men's prison. She was the only woman, and that meant that she had to be secluded and was alone with no one to talk to 23 hours a day. You know, you can imagine that somebody would kind of go a little stir crazy, and certainly be a little more self-obsessed. She was not. You could see by her letters, which as you refer to there in the book, to her lawyer, you can see that there's something more to her. And I think that she knew, she knew herself in her heart, I could never have bludgeoned this woman. She was accused of having pistol whipped this 60-year-old woman to death, and then she was strangled to death. It was a hideous, bloody crime scene. She knew she could never have done such a thing and lamented the fact that no one else believed her.
Right. It's powerful, Marcia, and I'm so glad that we have a chance to discuss it and that our audience has a chance to know about it. Again, everyone, Marcia Clark has been our guest. The book is Trial by Ambush, Murder and Justice, and the Truth About the Case of Barbara Graham. Definitely get it through our friends at Amazon.com or through your favorite local bookstore. It is a book that will have you talking, and I think it's a book that only you can write, Marcia, because, I mean, this is a world that you've been able to know. And I think that you are one of those trusted voices that people have come to turn to and say that's what's so interesting about us having in the past talked about fiction, but now to have a case like this that is not too far removed from us, right? I mean, that's the other thing about this. We're talking about the 1950s, not that long ago. And I think it really does show, though, the importance of not only, of course, truth, but also the work that the media can play in these things as well. I think that really comes through in this book. Marcia, how can our audience stay connected with you?
Oh, I'm on social media. You can find me. My handle is That Marcia Clark. And that was suggested to me by a publicist because I didn't know, well, what can I just, how about my name? She goes, oh, man, nobody's going to know who that is because there are other Marcia Clarks. I did not know this. So That Marcia Clark.
There you go. So make sure you guys are following her. Also, her website is MarciaClarkBooks.com. We'll link that up for our audience as well. Marcia, always a pleasure. Thank you again for spending some time with us and looking forward to our next chat together.
Thank you so much, Cyrus. I am too. You take care.
Thanks, you as well. And we thank your audience for tuning in to another great segment of Conversations Live. Until next time, I'm your host, Cyrus Webb, saying as always, enjoy your day, enjoy your life, enjoy your world. Thank you all so much for choosing Conversations Live today. Let's go make today amazing. Take care.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles. Discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com. Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.